And sometimes you and I, we look at religion, whether it's a religion here in the Middle East, in Israel, whether it's the religions of other parts of the world, and hopefully within those constructions, we can see what is purposeful and beneficial and useful for us. But we're not afraid to express our concern, not afraid to express our concern about the whole range and variety of beliefs and the kind of expectations which at times are placed upon us about what we have to believe. And we have this ability as human beings to look, to see for ourselves, to decide, to see what's skillful, what's appropriate. And rather similarly, that other paradigm which is constantly being presented to us is in the field of secular life, which in the period of the so-called Enlightenment period, when in Europe there was a significant shift away from a view of the monotheistic God who gave out reward and punishment. And this view captured the mind of people for centuries, and for some still does. And in the shift that took away from all of that, reason and thought became very important for us. The resource of the sciences became very, very important for us. And despite many, many people having made a shift or a mixture, are we any the happier for it? Has it brought out of us any greater wisdom or clarity? Why is it there is still so much selfishness and greed, and happiness and despair? Why is it in Europe at any given time some 50% of the population, adult population, is on some kind of medication? And it looks like we need to keep inquiring and exploring, recognize and acknowledge what's useful and valuable, let go quickly and immediately what is unhealthy and harmful. And some have found, some of you here, myself and others, to use a kind of time-honored term. We're trying to find some kind of middle way, middle ground. And that's going to take a lot of discernment, a real focusing of our attention, and for some, a significant reordering of one's whole life and one's whole consciousness. Because it seems to me, and you may agree or not, that these great institutions, in many respects, do not seem to be working very well for us. Instead of being our servants, have become our masters. And therefore, I feel, and hopefully you do too, that we have to dig very, very deeply. And that digging deeply is going to require from us a real bringing out of our inner life in very fresh ways, which might be quite unfamiliar and unknown to us. And when I was just speaking recently in Germany, I just made a comment in one of the talks. Frankly, I don't know how people in life get by without meditation. I mean, of course, I have a slight vested interest in this. I'm a meditation teacher. But to live one's life, and the primary movement for the life being habits, conditioning, tendencies, latent forces from within, pressures from without, and to know no real way of really stopping and really being still and really interrupting all of those tendencies, means for the person, the individual, and for the society, that we're just going to be pushed around by all of these tendencies and forces. We're in a massive state of denial about it, and the way we deny it, we call it choice. We speak, I have a choice. A choice to be miserable, a choice to be depressed, a choice to be unhappy, a choice to be confused, a choice. So if we're going to stop and look, maybe we have to simplify. And part of the common dialogue at the moment, and this is a little bit with the theme this afternoon, is around what we call personality. And sometimes the idea, in some of the circles that you and I move in, that if we can work through our personality, if we can work with it, the difficult aspects of it, the problematic features of it, and we kind of do all the methods, the techniques, the skills, the practices, the therapies, the meditations, and all of that, then in working with it and through it, perhaps we'll get to an essence. We'll get to something greater than the personality. We'll get behind the personality. So we might have abandoned, I hope you may have abandoned the idea of an external God, the monotheistic God who loves us. God loves us. He's not doing very well at it, I have to say. And one may have dropped that idea, that external agency, the creator. And we may then, in letting go of that, and it's not necessarily easy to let go of, may still wish deep down for something more than just me in my life, me in this world that I'm living in, and me trying to do the best I can to get through this life. So we drop God as our creator. We drop the idea of something much bigger, but sometimes inside of us, because we're terribly human, we want to find something real. So we say, my gosh, my personality is a hell of a problem. Some people like me and some people don't like me. Sometimes I like myself. Sometimes I can't stand myself. Sometimes I'm really negative and moody and I make my friend, my partner, my kids all miserable. Sometimes I'm very kind and generous. Sometimes I'm incredibly tight and mean. And sometimes I'm very outgoing and social. And sometimes I'm withdrawn and I'm sullen. Don't want to say anything to anybody. Gosh, my personality, please, where's my psychotherapist? Get me out of here. So sometimes we look and we say, gosh, the personality is, you know, problematic. It's problematic to ourselves. It's problematic to others. So I really need to work on myself. Myself is my personality. And there is a wish. And it gains a common view. There is a wish. But if I really work on myself, as I just mentioned, then perhaps I'll come and find my true self. A great idea. I'm fed up with this fictional self. I want to find my true self. I want to find out who I really am. Get to my true self. Or one may have some, whatever, Buddhist flavor. You think, oh no, self, no, keep away from that word. So I want to find my true nature. Or if I'm a little ambitious, my Buddha nature. It sounds better, really, doesn't it? Or my original nature, or my original face. Or my higher self. Or my pure consciousness, or whatever. So we've dismissed the external, the G-O-D, and all that goes along with it. I mean, some people. and said, okay, I'm not going to go for that. I just can't go for it any longer. So therefore, I want to look through my personality, and I want to find something which is really true. The real me. I just wonder whether this idea of personality and finding my true essence, personality and finding the soul of myself, personality and finding my true nature, whether this itself is a little bit problematic. We're never satisfied, have you noticed? Nothing is ever good enough. There always has this idea that there's got to be something more than who I am and where I am. And now we've gone from it's out there to it's inside of me, and it's behind me, somewhere, in there. And then sometimes the great masters come along. There are a rather lot of them these days. Maybe too many. And the masters will say to us, oh, you, the disciples, you, the followers, you, the sadhaks, it means the students or whatever, you're only speaking from your feelings. You're only speaking from your mind. You're only speaking from your thought, or you're only speaking from your head. So we oh my God, it's true, I'm terrible. And there's a kind of implication that the master, with a capital M of course, the master is not speaking from there. The master is speaking from this true self place. We say, oh yes, that's right. But no master and no student and no man and no woman can actually show this true self place. Nobody can say and can show, oh, keep your eyes open. Here comes my Buddha nature. Don't go away. Here comes, this is the true self speaking. But others, they're just speaking from their conditioned self, from their habitual self, from their just from their thought, just from their mind, just from their ideas. And we go along with this. We say, oh, you're right. The master knows. Papa knows. I wonder. Why is it that we are so quick to buy into this construct? Why is it that nothing is ever quite good enough? And there's always this promise, human being promise, something more. And you notice always with something more, some nirvana, some truth, some great enlightenment, there's something more. We're not happy to have it with a small letter at the beginning. We want a big letter. So we want the self with a big S. Bigger the better. We want truth with a huge big capital T on it. And even better, capital R, capital U, capital T, the whole lot. We want reality, because we're fed up with living in our fictions of our personality. So we want reality, capital R, E, can hardly spell it, A, L, I, T, Y, and a couple of exclamation marks, I've got it. I found the true reality. I've come to the truth. I found God. I found my true self. All big capital letters. And there's some kind of pull, energy, interest. Why? What's wrong with the world as it is? Why are all these promises being put out to us? Why have we rejected the religious language and now we've opted for another view? I was talking to It ran a little bit. And someone, I suppose most of the people of you here get the dreaded emails. It's definitely not E for enlightenment, I can tell you. And those of us who are in the various circuits, we receive emails, and probably most days of the week, people will send me an email and say, "Christopher, you've really got to watch this." Yeah. All sorts of things. Really got to watch this and see this. And one which we both had received was there was this American lady named Oprah Winfrey. And she found a book. This is how I heard things, by Mr. Eckhart Tolle, called The Power of Now, which has been extraordinarily successful. And it's a very lovely book. And some of you here will know the book and will have benefited from reading the book and found it insightful and beneficial. It's what interesting about the book, about this, that though we may speak, and we poor meditation teachers fall into this terrible category, about the importance of the now. But as you have seen on this first day of the retreat together, frankly, the now doesn't seem to have that much power to it. Because our mind doesn't seem to have a huge amount of interest in it. And the now doesn't seem to connect too easily with us. So we sit up the front here and we say, be here and now, be connected to the now, be in the present moment, the power of now. And the power of now sometimes seems quite powerless to keep our attention. Powerless it is. Even with our good intentions to be present, it's powerless. I was thinking of writing a book called The Powerlessness of Now. Actually, I think I might. Anyway. So, for every view that we have, it can seem very rational and very reasonable. And yes, the power of now. But when we inquire, we investigate a little bit closer, you see that the now is just coming together because of countless other conditions. Countless. And what's making up the now is you and me sitting here. I have the privilege of talking. You are listening, etc. Your attention may be present or not. But in order for us to be here, think of all the circumstances that have made it possible. You know, sometimes it's making time and space in your life. Some of you may have friends or family or a lover or somebody, and they have said, either you go on a retreat or it's all over. If you don't get your act together within 6 days, I don't want to see you again. So some of you are here under a little bit of pressure. Good luck. So all sorts of factors and conditions make up the present. What's happening for us here and now. We come together in forms, in personalities, in being together. What would it be for you and I to say, I'm going to give up, not easy, the idea of something more than. I'm not going to carry this idea. Whether it's the New Age Wallahs, or the religious Wallahs, or the true self wallahs, or your Buddha nature wallahs, or whatever it might be. I'm not going to carry this idea. Because if I keep on carrying it, there will always be a gap. Always. Either the gap will be, I haven't got it. I'm trying to do my practice. I haven't reached Nirvana. I haven't got this great buzz or whatever it is. I just haven't got it. And the self will feel disappointed. Or the view will be for us, oh, he's got it. She's got it. Or the view will be, I'm not sure if he's got it. She's got it. He might be sitting up on the stage, but that doesn't mean anything. Might be saying all the right words, but that doesn't mean anything. And so our world gets divided, the world of human beings, between those who honestly believe they've got it, whatever it is, and those who believe they haven't got it. Let me tell you one thing, it is not it. Those who have got it are in trouble, big time. And those who haven't got it are also in trouble, big time. Funny old world, isn't it? So we look and we say, okay, here's the features of my personality. Pleasing to some, displeasing to others. Pleasing to myself, displeasing to myself. So I ask myself, what is personality? What is this thing that we're so preoccupied with? You know, these days, where it's gone slightly mad, which is called the United States, that currently the elections are taking place with, as in simply forgettable names. And if you listen, it's very hard to hear anything of any substance being said. It's very much voting on personality. Who do you like best if you live in America? And on substance, there's very, very little. Very little is said. We're mad about personality. But when we're referring to it, what are we referring to? What does it mean to have a personality? What does it mean? Why are we so spellbound with it? And what we might say is that personality is the movement of the self, the movement of the I, which is arising, you and me, and it's landing somewhere. And it's landing in where there's certain tendencies or habits which are repeating themselves. So sometimes you might see somebody who would talk with her or him. You might say, gosh, this person's got such an amazing personality. Driving along the highway. And I noticed as we were driving up, there are some people who are driving incredibly fast. And there's three lanes and they're going like this, whizzing in and out. And going far faster than everybody else, the traffic light comes. And one gets to the traffic light, and the same person is now perhaps 10 or 15 meters ahead of one, having risked quite a few lives to get there. And then the person turns around and looks at you in the car and starts saying things to you. It doesn't sound like shalom. Turn around, this person saying all this, and the breath is so bad that the car window is steaming up. And when the thought arises, what an angry personality. And we meet somebody else and we have a conversation. And we say, oh, this person's an angel. This person is so pure. What a pure personality they have. Pure person. It's a sweetness and it's a delight to meet. In the Dharma language, stripping things away. There is the arising of the self, of the I. And the I links, it connects. And it connects with some feelings. It connects with an image. It connects with a thought about the person. It connects with a certain presence of the person. And we do exactly the same with ourselves. We say, oh, I am this kind of person. And out of all of that whole field of the inner life, we take a few aspects of it and we describe ourselves as this kind of person. We say, very popular one is, oh, I'm very busy. We love this word, busy. It's the four-lettered word of our time. And so the I feels very busy. So the I lands and we have an idea that we are doing a lot. We might be, but equally, we might be avoiding a lot more. Our busyness can give us the feeling of being rather important. I'm too busy, I'm so sorry. So the personality, through a lot of thinking, a lot of talking, a lot of writing, and a lot of running around like a chicken without a head, we make it into a virtue. And to the personality becomes, oh, I'm a very busy person. So to meditation, in a way, is to interrupt it all. Interrupt this view. And maybe, if you and I are really observing carefully and focusing, and really giving care, maybe there's just events unfolding. Maybe the idea of personality is a bit of a myth. Maybe personality is just the repetition of certain things more often than others. So I call this personality. If not easy to follow, especially the first day, forgive me. If with the personality, it's just that which repeats itself a little bit more often, loving personality, negative personality, busy personality, kind personality, addictive personality, or whatever, it repeats itself more often. And we look and say, I'm not going to refer to myself and others through what keeps repeating itself more often. I'm going to look in a fresh way. Then if the whole idea of personality is questionable, why do I want to look for anything behind it? Why do I want to be bothered with it? Looking for something behind it. In our meditations, just a few more minutes. In our meditations, even just on the first day, and just in the quietude of our being together, our connecting with ourselves will probably have revealed to us a little bit about where the self is landing. And it's not easy to be really honest. Where is the self landing? Where has it been landing today for you? Extremely clear about it. Has it landed, as I said earlier on, in a story? Has it landed around the mobile phone? One thinks, I should ring up this person. I know I'm not supposed to, but I really should ring up this person. The person might answer. Heaven forbid. And when she or he answers, you might have a nice conversation. It could be a nightmare. You ring, the person doesn't answer. Because you've been thinking, I should call, I should call, I should call, I should call. Mantra, mantra, call, call. And the person doesn't answer. Why isn't the person answering his or her mobile phone? Maybe they're in bed with a neighbor. Maybe they've emigrated. Maybe they don't want to talk to me anymore. Maybe, 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 maybe. So you come back into the meditation hall. I need to know, I need to know. One still doesn't know. You walk back in here. One can hardly sit with all the stuff that's coming up. Because one can't stay with the unknown. We can't live with the unknown. And sometimes, when we know, we make contact with that person. This person expresses his or her views about us. We can't live with that either. We're in one hell of a mess. Hell of a mess. No wonder we want to get away from personality. No wonder. Sometimes, it sounds like all bad news today, doesn't it? It is. It could get worse. But sometimes, the important thing, but it's all important. What's lovely about life? I nearly said thank God, but I won't. What is lovely about life? Sometimes we're not preoccupied with personality. We're not thinking about her or him or them or what they're like. We're not forming countless numbers of views and opinions about all those bizarre people on this retreat doing their slow walking meditation. We wonder what the hell's going on. Was not forming all manner of views and opinions about this person is like this, like this person's like this, and this person I really fancy, and this person, why do they want to come on a retreat for? All this is personality. And sometimes, marvelously and wonderfully, there is a break. There's a break in it. We're not going on about ourselves, our personality. And we're not going on about anybody else's either. And in the break that takes place, perhaps in the break, there's a potential to sense things quite differently. Quite differently. And meditation process. And the interruption about stories and personalities and issues and likes and dislikes, the interruption in that kind of opens a doorway for sensing and seeing and feeling and experiencing in a different way. And it's not behind what is present. I don't have to carry the idea personality per se is a problem. Identity is a problem. I don't have to make any gaps. I just want to sense life. I just want to sense what's right in front of me. I just want to sense what the immediacy is. I want to feel it well and clearly. And I don't want to have any other. No truth, no Buddha nature, no God, none of those distractions. And perhaps in some sensitivities, I can make allowances for personality, for the notion of identity. I can sense, aha, sometimes the eye, the sense of eye, it lands in the feelings, it lands in the thoughts, it lands in the memory, it lands in the ideas of who I am. And I'm going to make allowances for it. But I'm interested to see well and clearly, which includes that, and in its interruption, what else does it include? In the gardens here, quite lovely, beautiful. And when we're rather quiet in our being, and we're walking rather quietly upon the earth, which is a lovely thing to do, we'll sense and feel and see more. And you'll notice if you're very gentle in the being, soft in the being, and there's nothing too gross coming out of it. The other sentient beings around will get closer. There'll be a greater sense of intimacy. The birds will land closer to where you are. They'll sing more brightly. The trees and the flowers will feel closer. And so when our being is rather quiet and we're not obsessing and we're not hurrying and we're not rushing around and we're not engaged in me and mine and you and yours and all of that fragmentation, life actually, so to speak, moves closer to us, and we correspondingly move closer to life. The sense of life in that respect begins to reveal its magic, begins to reveal more of itself. And if you're standing out in the gardens there and you're just doing the standing meditation, you'll sense more. I just remembered just a couple of small incidents with animals with whom we have a very, very important relationship. Two that came to mind, I was doing a personal retreat. And just after dawn, this was a couple of years ago, the light came up. So I went to some woods nearby and joined what I call the Sangha of Trees, meaning just doing my standing meditation. And in the space of an hour of standing, fox went by, the dawn chorus, the stronger. And the beautiful moment was that a deer came by, and I was completely still, and his ears were twitching. He knew there's some odd sentient being there in the woods that's not normally around. That he knew. And it just turned, the deer, and just, small deer, just looked at me, and I looked at him. Just eye to eye. It couldn't happen unless there was a certain stillness, obviously. And one night in Totnes, in Devon, where I live, lovely night, and I went out for a walk around midnight. Down by the river, there's a track. Quite unexpectedly, a fox came off out of the field and then came right up beside me. Whoa, there. So I just started talking to the fox, mainly dear friend, I'm in the anti-fox hunting paid up member, fully supportive of your right to be free and independent and not to be hunted. Fox is very happy to hear. And the two of us just walked along the pathway, me talking, be curious, just in the moonlight, just walked along the pathway together. It was very sweet, very, very touching. Then he got bored with me and went off to find more interesting sentient beings. And I'd say sometimes, like the lake, when it's very clean and clear, then we can look into the lake. We can see the fishes and the stones. You can see so much vibrancy of life which is going on around. And therefore I say, we don't have to look for some big other with lots of capital letters hanging on it. But actually, as it were, dive more deeply into life itself. And perhaps all of our obsessing and preoccupations is actually a hiding, and we're missing precious things which really nourish us and fulfill us as human beings. And out of that comes not only much love, but much energy, much creativity, much compassion, because we're feeling life and feeling our way into it. Why? Because we are feeling creatures. May all beings live with love. May all beings see deeply. May all beings live with wisdom. So let's have a quiet minute, shall we?